are species like able to camouflage some of them like to the perfectly, like you can't even tell the difference between the surrounding environment.
You mean like leaf mimicking insects and stuff like that? Well, for the vast majority of them, it's passive, right? Thank you, Jackie. It's not active camouflage. That's just how they look. So it's not really something like that they do. Now, in terms of how could something like that evolve, I actually do talk about this in my book, and I can give you like a short rundown of it, because this is used as an argument for like not exactly irreducible complexity, but kind of sort of. So evolution deniers will say, if the animal is less than perfectly camouflaged, then natural selection cannot favor it. So you cannot get these gradual increments up until the perfect camouflage. Now, that's completely wrong, because what this argument imagines is that we have fully camouflaged insects and then ones that aren't fully camouflaged, and so natural selection wouldn't favor them. But that's not how it works. Instead, we have insects that aren't camouflaged like at all versus some that have partial camouflage. Thank you, Matt. Obviously, the partial camouflage is more favorable than no camouflage. And by partial, it can literally start with the insects. like maybe they start off brown and then some of them are born green. So they start living instead of on the branches and in holes in the trunks or whatever amongst the leaves, and they blend in, right? Mm-hmm. Then, so that happens and that changes the population. Then many generations later or whatever, some of them are born and they have slightly flatter bodies, right? Either like narrow or broad. And that sort of is leaf-like in a little bit, or in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It only has to convey a microscopic survival advantage for natural selection to favor it. And then generation after generation, these micro mutations that they love to talk about, they keep going. And then eventually even flatter, wider, broader insects are favored. And that's sort of like a positive feedback loop almost. I have the hiccups, sorry, but so almost like positive feedback, those changes keep accruing. And then eventually, like the veins, the fake veins that you see on them, those can pop up later. All you have to keep in mind is, in order for this trait to show up, it starts from nothing. So we all get stuck on like the idea that they wouldn't be, like natural selection wouldn't favor them over the others that are camouflaged, but those don't exist yet. Partial camouflage is better than no camouflage. That's always true. And so natural selection could favor the incremental steps all the way up. Like they ask the question, what good is half a wing or half of camouflage? Well, if nobody has camouflage, then it's extremely good. So.
It's true. Makes sense. Cool. But what about like some others, like octopus or I think some other marine that are able to adapt instantly to their environment?
That's done with what are called chromatophores. I think those work in two different ways. So they have sort of like a basement layer of skin, and there are basically, there's two or three different, they're basically little clusters of cells, little goblets almost of cells, and they have a color to them. It's sort of like pixels on a TV screen, right? The pixels have a set color that does not change. Well, you can change which of the RGBs are turned on, but whatever. So all that happens is that those get bigger or smaller. And so by manipulating those, making them bigger or smaller, that can, like turning on the different combinations of RGB pixels on a smart screen or a LCD screen, that changes the color. Do I think there could be microorganism life on Saturn and Jupiter's moons that have water? I Look, there's a lot we don't know about those bodies. For Europa, trying to think. For Enceladus, we know there's liquid water because it has geysers. Well, they're not exactly geysers. They're like fissure geysers. So I don't know if you guys have ever heard about this, but there's something called a fissure eruption. That's where instead of a volcano, the Earth's crust literally splits open, and so you can get hundreds or thousands of kilometers worth of crust that opens up, and so you get it's basically like having thousands of volcanoes all erupting at the same time. So, on Enceladus, the surface cracks open and water comes out, but you can see pictures of it. You can see it's like a ribbon of material, so they're like fissure geysers, if that's a term. I have no idea, but that's what I'm gonna call them. For Europa, well, there aren't any craters on Europa, which means the surface has to be young. And those cracks, I'm not sure if we've ever observed those cracks like change in real time or like over the course of like a year or something like that. So I'm not sure if we have actual direct evidence of water coming up. From what I've heard, the question as to whether there is liquid water on Europa is actually up for debate. It could be a thing where Europa's basically frozen all the way through, but every now and then some internal heat produces water that comes up and breaks apart. Kind of like how, not exactly like Earth's mantle, but something like that. There's a really big misconception that Earth's mantle is molten. It's not. It's solid rock. It just deforms. So perhaps Europa's something like that. We just don't know yet. Isn't religion started because we couldn't explain stuff, so we made up something to explain it? Well, I think that's a big part of it, but I think that alone wouldn't explain why religion is so successful. I think the thing that makes it successful is that religions were probably started as a way to, like, humans have always had norms and customs and things that are taboo. There's tons of anthropology and neuroscience and psychology that supports this. And religions were probably ways of people to rationalize the rules that they have. It's not exactly an explanation. Like a lot of the religions probably just started off as little clubs that people were part of. Like, look, we believe in these things, and these are extremely important. Like we really believe that if you don't, I don't know, like incest taboos are, that's an extremely common component of religions, but it's also like common sense, right? Even to people living a very long time ago, it was sort of common sense until you get to the European monarchies, that is. So like originally they just probably had these extremely like strict and important rules for it, and then it just metamorphosizes over time. It just becomes its own thing. And so I think that's probably the reason why religions are so successful. Community is the only thing religion has going for it. Yeah, it is an extremely good advantage though. Religious people are generally, I mean, if we can take the survey data results to be accurate, which I think they probably are, they're genuinely more happy than other people and probably more successful because they have a network. And because humans, even if you think that you're the kind of person that just wants to be left alone or whatever, that's not human nature, right? So, kind of the problem, and I think fundamentally, Jonathan Haidt talks about this in his really great book. What the hell is that book called? The Righteous Mind. That, like, conservatives and evangelicals have this huge advantage. Actually, I don't remember. I know he taught. There's a chapter in that book called The Conservative Advantage. But now that I think about it, I actually don't remember what his argument was because it's been so long since I read that book. But what I've always thought is that, you know, the left is correct on, like, history shows that the left has been correct on most things. Especially social progressive ideas, those have been victorious throughout all of history. Interracial marriages, rights for certain people to vote, expanding property rights for people, wage equality for the sexes and all that kind of stuff. Like, we've been on the right side of history. But the problem is, right-wing political culture is a lot more homogenous, because I think it's kind of a default human nature in a weird way. Because rural community, I think this is going to sound kind of like, I'm going to kind of sound like an asshole here, but like, rural communities all think the same. I saw this more so than at any time in my life. When you guys can look up a political map from this, I don't know if anybody remembers when Roy Moore ran for the senator of Alabama. And he's a guy that, like, openly admitted when he was like 30 something years old, he was dating 17-year-old girls and stuff like that. So it's like, yeah, you can't vote for Roy Moore. Like, he's a open pedophile. But if you go look at the election map in the rural counties, he got between 85% to 95% of the vote. Like, I'm sorry to say it, but if you can think, you can't come up with a great case for voting for this guy. Some people are like single subject voters on like pro-life or whatever, because they think it's murder. Nothing could be more important than that. But the fact that there's just no plurality of opinion, 95%, shows that there's just like this default. Right now, anyways, I'm going on a tangent here, but that's okay. It's my life. I can do what I want. The left, we are, here's a term that the left likes. We are intersectionalized, which is a problem, because we have groups that, it's not exactly that they don't have exactly the same goals in mind, but they're not cohesive, right? The people fighting for, like, equal pay, which is actually stupid because it's been illegal to pay a woman less than a man since the 50s, but whatever. Those people and the LGBTQ plus community, they're on the same political side, but they're not united in a common cause, right? Now, it's kind of hard to say that the gun nuts and the pro-lifers are united behind a common cause, too. I mean, I'm not a right winger, so I don't know what to say, you know, in their favor. But clearly there's something pulling that all together. Whereas us, our side, it's not exactly that we're kind of driving ourselves apart, but we just don't have anything that necessarily pulls us together, I feel like. Like, there aren't secular churches, and so you don't get a unifying message one day a week. You know, and that is our fundamental disadvantage. But despite that, progress happens. Do you think most, if not all, of these subjects have a political element? Kind of, in a way.